Welcome to Commons and Chronicles, the podcast where we talk about all the best Creative Commons and reusable open game license content. If you need resources for your creative writing, game design, or you just love lore, Commons and Chronicles is for you. Hi everyone, this is a continuation of the Conan the Barbarian series of the show, and in this episode I want to talk about Koth, a very important region, and yet it's a region that we don't really spend a whole lot of time in ourselves, in the books. But it's one of those places that lurks in the background, not quite as heavily as, say, Stygia, but it's a major force. Here's what a character in the Conan book Tower of the Elephant says about some of the history of the region. "We saw the survivors of Pictum and Atlantis build their Stone Age empires and go down to ruin, locked in bloody wars. We saw the Picts sink into abysmal savagery, the Atlanteans into apedom again. We saw new savages drift southward in conquering waves from the Arctic Circle to build a new civilization with new kingdoms called Nemedia and Koth and Aquilonia and their sisters." So Nemedia, Koth, and Aquilonia are specifically called out, at least in Tower of the Elephant, as kind of major important kingdoms of the region, just to kind of give you an idea of the weight of Koth. It's implied that Koth is a fairly vast region. I say it's implied because there's enough about Koth in the books of such diversity that it strikes me that it must be a pretty big area that we're talking about. There's a little bit of confusion in some of the wording of the descriptions of Koth, but it is stated that Koth borders on the pastoral lands of Shem, but it is also stated in other areas that Shem is itself a region of Koth. So, not too clear on whether Koth is both a region and a kingdom, with another kingdom being Shem, or whether there's some other arrangement there. Not really sure, but Koth and Shem are in some way related. They are east of Hyrcania, and the Kothian king is Khossus, or Khossus, Khossus. Now, at some point, Khossus is captured by a neighboring kingdom, the neighboring kingdom of Ophir, O-P-H-I-R, which will probably get its own episode. So in his absence, his sister, Yasmila, takes over rulership. Now Shem is one of the major, as I say, either regions or sister kingdoms or just historical area in Koth. It is south of Argos, we know that. It has long rolling meadowlands with the white crowns of towers of cities in the distance and horsemen with blue-black beards who sit on their steeds along the shore and eye passing galleys with suspicion. They're not big on trade, although you will meet a Shemite pirate here and there, so Some of them go down to the ocean to get involved with the sea trade, but Shem itself isn't really a trading place. I get the idea from the descriptions that they don't really have a port cities. They may jut up against the sea. They may not. They may be inland away. I'm not sure, but I get a feeling that it's not super conducive to sea trade. And besides that, they have other cities within Koth that probably take care of that. It is said that as far west as Shushan, which I don't know where that is, Shem is lorded over by Hyrcania, Hyrcania being yet another kingdom. So whether Shem is perhaps split between Koth and Hyrcania, or whether Shem is within Koth but ruled by Hyrcania, we're not really sure. It's not super clear. All we know is that the Shemites are a pretty major force. They pop up a lot of places as caravan keepers, as thieves, as warriors, and they're near or within Koth. Moving away from the coastal areas within this Shemite region, you eventually come across a fairly vast desert. Not sure of the size of this desert, but we do know that there's not a whole lot around, it being a desert, but there is a great city there called Khauran, K-H-A-U-R-A-N. This city is really the only city in the region, and it is considered a bastion of civilization, the watchtower over the fertile meadows behind it and the desert in front of it. There are vineyards in the area. It's sort of that magical climate for all of the best things to grow, and yet it dissolves then into desert. The desert, of course, leads further inland to Hyrcania and Turan and other kingdoms that progressively become, shall we say, a little bit like Al-Kadim in the D&D setting, if you're familiar with that at all. But you get the flavor of sultans and caravans and caravan routes and camels and all those classical kind of Arabian Night kinds of fairy tales. The local sultan or warlord or something, it's not really clarified who or what he is, but his name is Constantius. We know that he is Shemite, and he rules over the land and subjugates, really, the locals, the aboriginal people of the region. He forces them to work and takes what they earn for himself, probably under the guise of taxation, I imagine. So you get, there's a little bit of strife within the region. It's not everyone is happy and wealthy, but there are those who are obviously profiting off of this. Of course, that's pure fantasy. Nothing like that would ever happen in the real world. Now, all of this is happening in this kind of desert inland region that, as I say, starts to bleed into Hyrcania and, I think, more importantly, into the Turanian kingdom, T-U-R-A-N, Turan. That's an important region. We'll probably talk about that in its own episode because it's a major, I guess, for lack of a better analogy, it's a major eastern kingdom, although it's not really in the east in this world, it's in the west. There are a couple of other Shemitish cities in this general area. There's Pelishtim, Anakim, and Akarim. None of them are really places that you spend any time in the books, but you do know that these are sort of outpost cities, as it were, against the Zaugirs, Z-A-U-G-I-R-S. The Zaugirs are kind of inland barbarians, not the north kind, just generic savages, I guess, barbarians, who raid various Shemite cities. They're mostly within wandering tribes without homes. They're nomadic. They roam around, and it's not explicitly revealed whether their reputation for being troublesome raiders is justly earned or whether that's something that they've been driven to unjustly or really what exactly the morality is within this region. It's never really explained. Conan tends to be pretty neutral, leaning towards chaotic, so it's often that he'll take sides with people who are a little bit downtrodden, possibly. So the fact that he has joined some wandering bands of probably what people would call raiding parties, it kind of makes me think that maybe this group of wandering nomads, maybe they aren't so bad after all. Olgird Vladislav is a Kozak, K-O-Z-A-K, adventurer who wanders down from the northern steppes and made a name for himself within the Zaugirs and pulled a band of Zaugir men together to wander the desert and plains and take what they need to get by. There are a couple of different names for these groups, and so many of them have either really, really similar names or names that possibly are purely generic. So I'm not sure whether they're all the same or whether they're unique. I'm not really sure on the lineage of all these different bands of wandering war parties that Conan either encounters or sometimes joins. Generically, they appear to be called the Free Company or the Free Companies. And these are, this seems to be a term for anyone who is in a war band who's not associated with an anointed king or an official kingdom. So Free Companies can be pretty much an all-purpose band of mercenaries. And maybe mercenaries isn't the right term because that implies that they are hired by someone. But these appear more to be self-sufficient, wandering mini-kingdoms. They're little portable kingdoms without a land. So they wander around, and they do whatever they want, really. So in terms of a RPG adventure, just any generic free company is a perfect opportunity to get either swept up in a fight for which you would otherwise have no interest, or swept up in a fight where you find yourself suddenly on the opposing side of something just to stay alive. So free companies, they're all over this region especially. A couple of different people ought to be mentioned in this region for one reason or another. So a couple of famous Shemites and Kothians would be King Strabonus, certainly, Strabonus. He is a king of Koth, and by my reckoning, he is the king of Koth after Kossus, and I could be wrong about that, but that's the way that I'm stringing together the events of the books, which, as I have mentioned before, are not very linear. Robert E. Howard delivered the Conan stories completely out of chronology for Conan's life. There's no logical timeline if you read the Conan stories as released. It really doesn't make any sense. They're clearly snapshots of different times of Conan's life, here, there, when he's younger, when he's older. It's different every time, so it's pretty difficult to really string it all together sensibly. But by my reckoning, the events with King Kossus happened to a younger Conan than the events of King Strabonus. So there you go. I believe that the lineage was at least Kossus and then Strabonus, or actually technically Kossus and then Yasmila, while Kossus was a captive of Ophir, and then presumably Kossus again, and then King Strabonus. That's my take on this. Of course, there is Yasmila, who I've mentioned a couple of times now. She is the sister to the then absent king, King Kossus. So she is, at the time that you meet her in the book, the current queen of Koth. She is a devout worshipper of Ishtar, but converts, at least temporarily, we're not too sure, to Mitra in a time of dire need. She is the owner of a jeweled ring called the Star of Korala, Khorala, which is a magic ring. It is an enchanted ring. When properly controlled, it enslaves the hearts of anyone of the opposite sex. Another character is Vatisa, Vateesa. She is the handmaiden to Yasmila. Amalrus is a slender, fastidious, treacherous, dangerous as a cobra. He's a warrior of Koth. There's Count Thespides, a count in Koth. Chancellor Taurus, Taurus. He is a chancellor in Koth as well. That gets a little bit confusing because there is another character later named Taurus in the Tower of the Elephant book, actually, his name is Taurus, and he's not the same one. He's not from Koth. He's not a chancellor. He's completely a different character. So if you hear Taurus here and then Taurus somewhere else, they might be two different Tauruses. There's Lord Amalric, a nobleman of Koth. Agashupras, in the Kothian court, this is probably a title, not a name, I believe. Aga, it appears, from what I can tell, to be a title, sort of like imam or father, whatever. Agashupras is a priest of Ishtar. Another important Kothian is Zorathus. He's a Kothic merchant who unwittingly purchases the Heart of Ahriman. The Heart of Ahriman being a gemstone or relic of some sort that can enable all sorts of black magic to occur. I'll leave it at that to avoid too many spoilers. Well, speaking of black magic, though, we should mention Sotha Lanti. Sotha Lanti is supposedly a hybrid of possibly a demon or maybe an undead and a human. Rumor holds it that a dancing girl of Shadazar, I don't know where Shadazar is, it's presumably a city somewhere in Koth. Rumor has it that this dancing girl went out and fell asleep a little bit too near the pre-human ruins of Dagoth Hill, and she woke up in the grip of a demon. From this unholy union was spawned an accursed hybrid man called Sotha Lanti. Sotha Lanti wears silken robes. He has big, great black eyes glittering from a face like a bird of prey. Of this Kothian wizard, dark tales were told. Tussle-headed women in northern and western villages frightened children with his name, and rebellious slaves were brought to abased submission quicker than by the lash with threat of being sold to him. Men said that he had a whole library of dark works bound in skin, flayed from living human victims, and that in nameless pits below the hill whereon his palace sat, he trafficked with the powers of darkness, trading screaming girl slaves for unholy secrets. He was the real ruler of Koth. That seems pretty dire, pretty bad. It's probably not a good thing that Sothelanti is walking around in Koth. Well, good thing there's Pelias, P-E-L-I-A-S. He's a necromancer himself from Koth. He's a worshipper of Ishtar and the prime rival of Sothelanti. Unfortunately, he spent about a decade as a captive of a guy named Yothga until Conan frees him, and he's then able to come back to civilization and fight Sothelanti. Of course, being a necromancer, he can do cool things like reanimate the dead. Those are a lot of Koths. Kothians, Kothics. So let's talk about some Shemites now. There's a Shemitish adventurer or treasure hunter named Zargiba, who is the partner with Thutmekri, another a Stygian adventurer or rogue. And these two devise a plot to get the treasure away from, I guess, its rightful owners with an ingenious plan that I cannot possibly reveal to you, but I can urge you to go read The Jewels of Gwalior. That is my favorite, absolute favorite Conan book, I think. There are a lot of my favorite Conan books, but I think the Jewels of Gwalior probably is my most favorite. It made the biggest impression on me, I think, when I was first reading the books through. It just really captured a lot of, just it really hit me, some of the surprises in that book. So go read that one. If you don't read any other Conan book, read that one. Another famous Shemite that you absolutely have got to know is Belit, B-E-L-I-T. She is a Shemite woman, swears by Ishtar, and by swears by Ishtar, I mean she literally swears by Ishtar. Like when she's swearing, she swears by she swears with Ishtar's name. Now, that also may mean something in the Conan world, though, because people who swear by a god are very rarely just swearing by that god. They're usually swearing by that god because that's their god to swear by. So I kind of think, at least in my headcanon, Belit is a follower of Ishtar. She's not just summarily invoking Ishtar's name because it's a good swear word. And this is a little bit supported, and I'll talk more about Ishtar in the next section or so, but this is a little bit supported by the fact that Belit is a dancer as well, and there are certain rituals that go along with Ishtar that suggest that something like dancing would probably be appropriate along with Ishtar worship. And last but not least, she's the leader of a fierce band of reavers, or pirates. Her ship is the Tigris, and she claims to be descended from kings of Ascalon, but it's unclear whether she means that very literally, like, hey, I'm a princess, or whether she's just referencing her general heritage or maybe the lineage of her land or something like that. She is an alluring dancer. She dances sometimes after a great victory. She's a beautiful lady. She's got dark black hair, black as the Stygian night. She's both lithe and voluptuous. She's a great fighter. And again, she's a dancer, so control over her body she has down 100%. She is untamed as a desert wind, supple and dangerous as a she-panther. So she and Conan become a thing. They're a couple for a little while. And she swears that if she were to ever die, that she would return from the abyss to aid Conan in his battle. So she is a fierce, fierce force of both the natural and supernatural. She is an undying warrior princess pirate. All of those things meant possibly very literally, depending on her lineage. She makes her appearance in a book called The Queen of the Black Coast, or a story rather called Queen of the Black Coast. It's highly recommended. It's another good one. All right, on to the next section, which I guess I'll call factions. There are two notable factions. One I've kind of already mentioned, which is the Free Companions. These, again, they appear in several of the Conan stories, and it's never really clear which is which and whether at all they are associated, whether it's a convention in this world to call them Free Companions, or that they call themselves Free Companions, or whether it's just a generic term that you apply to people without without a lord or lady. They are usually groups of Shemetish and Kothic warriors, but they could be anyone. They could be Afghulis, they could be Khwarazm, they could be any number of nationalities, and they can be found pretty much anywhere, but generally I think it's mostly in the mountainous regions and the plains and not in the city, that's for sure. They're roaming bands of bandits, really. Now there's also the Black Corsairs. This is a group of pirates who Conan led as their chief, or Amra, A-M-R-A. It is not 100% clear, because this is referenced in one story. We're not really sure if this is the same group of pirates that he led with Belit, or whether it's a separate group of pirates. There is definitely the impression from several of the stories that Conan, possibly after falling in with Belit, possibly started sort of got sidetracked on a number of pirate excursions for a while. It's not clear, because a lot of it happens off screen, but there is that, you get that impression. So those are the two factions, for lack of a better word, the pirates of the sea and pirates of the land. So let's talk a little bit about gods. Of course, we've already talked about one god in the Aquilonia, well, two gods, one in the Aquilonia episode and one in the Stygia episode. Stygia, of course, is the land of Set, the evil god, the evil serpent god, and Aquilonia is one of the many lands where Mitra has taken a very real hold. And Mitra is very pervasive. It's an evangelical religion. People go out and spread the good word of Mitra. It is a very active religion that grows and tends to encourage people to worship Mitra above all others. That can be a little bit of a clash in some regions, and Koth is one of those regions. In Koth, traditionally, as far as we can tell, Ishtar is the primary goddess. Ishtar is very strong in Koth, but also in some other southern regions you'll find her. She was sworn, her name is taken by Strabonus, the king of Koth, in the Scarlet Citadel, at least. She is described as part of the, quote, sensual, luxurious, yet despotic habits of the East. Yasmila of Koth decided to defect to Mitra at the encouragement of her handmaiden, who said, hey, Mitra's been doing a lot of great things for me, so why don't you go pray to Mitra? And Yasmila assumed that she should approach her new god, that is Mitra, naked, on my knees, as befits a supplicant, lest Mitra deem I lack humility. So it can be assumed that that's what she's used to from worshipping Ishtar, because I don't think you'd usually walk into a temple and say, well, I should probably approach the altar naked on my knees to show my humility. So I'm assuming that is something that she would be used to for Ishtar. Ishtar, having been said, is sensual, luxurious, yet despotic habits of the East. I get the sense that Ishtar is not big on the whole rejection of the physical realm kind of god. I don't think that, or goddess, or whatever Ishtar is. Again, genders, like in, as in Pagana and other things, it's not really discussed, and the gods are not so fleshed out in the Conan universe that they have relationships with each other as they do, for instance, when you hear about, you know, some of the Norse mythologies, or even the Egyptian, or certainly the Greek, which I think excels in the soap opera of the lives of gods. You don't really get that in Conan. So Ishtar, whatever she may be, whether a god or a goddess, or whether it doesn't even matter in the realm of the gods, she doesn't reject the physical realm, and I think you get that in lots of little pieces. You know, you get that idea from some of her followers, Yasmila being one, Belit being another. It just kind of goes to show that there's a goddess out there who doesn't demand that you reject all of your worldly goods or worldly problems, but clearly does demand that you show your humility in the eyes of the goddess in her temple. So that's Ishtar. You'll hear Ishtar here and there. She seems to be pretty solidly established in some of the southern and eastern kingdoms. But make no mistake, Mitra definitely is making inroads, and it's you get this the feeling that it's probably just a matter of time before Mitra sort of takes over. Another god that you'll hear about is Bel, B-E-L. He or she is the god of thieves, invoked by Taurus of Numidia. Conan, as a thief in Zamora, learnt of Bel. Bel is actually Shemetish, born in ancient Shumir long time ago. He went forth laughing with a curled beard and impish wise eyes to steal the gems of the kings of old times, and therefore became the god of thieves. Pretty important, pretty significant god. And again, that's actually a Shemetish god. There are some other Shemetish gods we hear about in the Queen of the Black Coast, that being Ashtoreth, Derketo, and Adonis. Now, Adonis, A-D-O-N-I-S, is obviously not the same Adonis from the Greek mythology, I'm assuming, and then Derketo is kind of referenced elsewhere as a Stygian god, but it's spelled a little bit differently, or at least it was on my e-reader, so it could be a Gutenberg typo, or it could be that it's a separate god, or it could be that it's the same god, and that the Stygians and the Shemites have to sort of argue over who came up with Derketo and who Derketo really helps. But it's all kind of in those southerly regions, so it's conceivable that Derketo is the same god and is just kind of shared between some Shemites and some Stygians. They're I'm guessing, minor gods, because you really only hear their names once. And that's what I've got on Koth and Shem. Hopefully that was informative. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next time. That's it for this week's episode. Thank you very much for listening. My name is Klaatu. You can reach me via email at klaatu@member.fsf.org. You can also usually catch me in IRC as not Klaatu. I'm on the Freenode network. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll talk to you next time.